Welcome to Southeast Geeks, a Silicon Slopes East podcast devoted to what people are geeky about in southeastern Utah. I'm your host, Jade Powell. On these podcasts, we interview locals, business owners, and individuals that spend time in southeastern Utah for one geeky reason or another. These episodes may be about individuals or companies doing geeky things in the area that people are passionate about. Today, I'm talking with our region's legislative elected officials, Representative Watkins, Representative Lyman, and Senator Hinkins. How are you doing today?
Great.
Good. Very good.
I'm happy to have you here. Can you, maybe we'll just start with Representative Watkins and the Representative Lyman, and then end with Senator Hinkins. Just kind of take a minute, introduce yourself. You know, what are the things that you're passionate about in southeastern Utah? What do you like to do? Your career choice? How long you've been in the legislature? Things like that.
Okay. Well, I'm an original Utah, born in Cache County, which is the northern part of the state. But when I got married, I was going to school at Utah State in Logan, and I was married, and my husband, was looking for a job and interviewed for a job in Emory County. I'm not even sure I had ever been here before. And so he took it, and we came down here, and interestingly enough, they were in a drought back then. And I had come from a couple of years in California. It's where my parents had moved to. And I looked around and I said to him, do you think we could tear that contract up? But once we were here for literally just a couple of months, we were looking for property to buy. We decided that this would be a great place to raise kids and have teaching careers. I wasn't quite through a school yet, but he was. And I did finish my education here through the extension at Utah State, and was a teacher. And about two-thirds of the way through my career, I ended up working for the Utah Education Association. And you asked about, how long I'd been in the legislature. And I became really involved in watching the legislature because they directly affect teachers and their salaries and benefits. And so that's where I kind of got involved. But this is my 11th year. I was in for 4 years, out for four, and then back in. And so I just finished my 11th session. And I read a thing that there's only 10 of us that have more than 10 years in the House, on the House side. And so I actually am pretty high up in seniority. And so actually, I enjoy doing the legislative stuff. It can be interesting and fun. At home, I just love to work. I love working outside. If I'm really happy, I'm dirty, because I've been out in the flowers, in the dirt, moving things around, hauling things with the tractor. We've got chickens and a cat. And so I get to talk to them a lot because we live out in the county. And I would just say that I do love to go to the Disney parks and Universal Studios. Have a trip planned this summer to go with one of my kids and my grandson, because I'm raising a grandson. And so I like to do that. But really and truly, I'm just a hard worker, and that makes me my day.
Thank you. How about you, Representative Lyman?
Yeah, great response from Christine. I always say that we're blessed in San Juan County because we got two reps representing us. Christine was our representative for a while, and still, I know San Juan County's right there with her on legislation, and so I appreciate that. But I'm from Blanding, also born and raised in Utah, fifth generation in Blandingite, and in southeastern Utah, my interest has always been, the land that is around us. I grew up not knowing that there was such a thing as trespassing, because we just had access to the land and would go out and enjoy it and spend a lot of time at Lake Powell, a lot of time out in the sticks and jeep trails down to Hole in the Rock, and our heritage and learning about who we are, where we come from, and always visiting the Indian ruins and an appreciation for that. And so as kind of moving into the political sphere, I always say I didn't choose politics. It kind of chose me. Just saw, as a CPA, I'm a CPA. My dad was a CPA before me. So I loved him and respected him and wanted to be like him. So I kind of chose that route. I came to work in Blanding kind of on an internship. And at the end of the internship, I was getting ready to go for a master's degree. And my dad died unexpectedly of a heart attack very young. And I thought, well, maybe this is, you know, God's plan for me to be in Blanding and run this office, since there was nobody else to take it. So, and it was the best decision I ever made to stay there and work with the clients and the people, and started up some really great companies, including Utah Navajo Health Systems, Eagle Air Med, some big things that have had a major impact in the area. And I feel comfortable and happy with my involvement with those people. Seeing the college grow and expand thanks to, you know, good efforts from people like Senator Hinkins and Representative Watkins and others that have helped that, working closely with Native Americans. I will say, when it comes to politics, I had a conversation with Representative Congressman Curtis, and I said, look, I'm a really simple person. It all comes down to one thing, and it's Bears Ears. And Bears Ears is kind of symbolic about, you know, what who's in charge of the state of Utah. Is it the state or is it the federal government? And can they come in and just shut off our economy and our grazing and our access to land and shut down Lake Powell on an announcement, and everything shuts down? And so it's been kind of a issue that's dragged me into politics. I was county commissioner for 8 years. Mike Noel, a hero of mine, decided not to run for the state legislature and called me and said that I should think about it. And anyway, the timing was right. So been in the legislature now for 4 years, I guess I just finished my fifth session, and still feel like a rookie, but glad to be there. Anyway, love San Juan County, love the outdoors. I'm sitting in Moab right now. I'm here at High Point Hummer, gave me a spot upstairs to come and do this. And I love my district. It's the biggest House district. I get no sympathy from Senator Hinkins because his is all of mine plus all of his. But it's very large. It's got all five of the national parks, if I include the East Gate of Zions. And it's beautiful. It's great. Wonderful people. And I'm just thrilled to be here.
Thanks, Representative. How about you, Senator?
Well, I'm David Hinkins, and I grew up in Emery County here in Utah. Like Representative Lyman's, 4 or 5 generations that we've been here, came with the pioneers, just a lot of my family members. On my father's side of the family, they came as Welsh coal miners from Wells back in 1860s or something like that.
And wow.
So we've been in Farron since 1870s. I was in over Sand Peak County to start with. And I grew up and went to high school in Emory High School, graduated from there with a social diploma, and then moved on to Utah Technical College in Provo and got electrical automation technology. When I graduated, I went to work for I was working for U.S. Steel at the steel mill temporarily, and I transferred to the Horse Canyon mine, to the coal mine out in East Carbon. And so I worked there for a few years, for 3 years, and they was mentioned that because the steel mill was closed in Orem, that they would no longer be operating the mine. So I moved back to my hometown of Orangeville and started an electric motor repair business in 1976. Feels like it. Yeah, 1976, and so we've been doing that for the duration of repairing electric motors for the coal mines and power plants and agriculture. And I got into the legislature, not that we didn't have good representatives, it's just that we were in the minority party in Utah. And when Senator Dimitrich, who had been there for 40 years in the House and then in the Senate, said that because of the reorganization of the politics and stuff in Utah, that a chance of a Democrat getting reelected would be pretty minimal. And so somebody from Utah County would more than likely take our spot. And so he suggested that somebody, a Republican from Emory County, would have a good chance. And so we was at a conference, and there was a mining conference up at the Country Club here in Carbon County. And he says, we probably need to try and get somebody in the majority party in Utah to try to get some, a lot of things are decided in caucus as much as on the Senate floor. And so they talked me into running. I had no experience in politics. I had never been in the city council or anything like that. So I had no previous experience other than running my business. And so that's how I ended up in there. I've been there now 15, this was the 15th session. I got elected in 2009, sworn in 2009. Same as Chris and I ran together at the same time. And so I'm number two in seniority there now, which is a good place to be.
Yeah.
When it comes to appropriations and chairmanships and all that sort of stuff.
Is it the same, like Representative Watkins, you mentioned, what was that statistic that they're out of all the House?
Yeah, there's 75 of us and only 10 of us have more than 10 years.
Yeah. And that's what we like. I mean, I've
we want a turnover.
Been too long. You know, yeah. we're a part-time legislature and they want you to get in there. If you're going to make laws, you need to be able to go back and live within the laws that you make with your businesses and your personal life. And so we don't need full-time legislators, which I'm almost turned into one. So I'm rethinking what I should be doing. And I'm one of those people that I complain about. Probably, you know, that I've been there too damn long.
Yeah. Thanks for those introductions. So we have an 11-year veteran, 15 years in the Senate. We have Representative Lyman, who has been a county commissioner for 8 years and then just finished his fifth session as a representative. Over all those years, what are some legislation that you're really proud of that you've helped pass? And what good do they do for the community? Maybe also on the flip side, where some things that you wish you could have been passed that has now been detrimental and you're still working on?
Well, one of the biggest things that we've all three worked on was in 2009 was to appropriate $8 million for the Navajo Water Trust. And that was able to leverage from the federal government's originally, if it would have passed back in D.C., it would have been $165 million. To get running water for the Utah Navajos on the reservation. And, but it's taken until just last year when Senator Romney got the bill through for $220 million on top of the $8 million that the state put into, that now they'll be starting to develop water infrastructure to pump out of the San Juan River into the Monument Valley and to the Anath Chap, everywhere. You know, it'll finally get running water to the Utah Navajos, and that's probably the biggest thing that all three of us have been involved in. I mean, Representative Lyman was the county commissioner at that time, and then Representative Watkins and I, that was our bill that we sponsored to appropriate that
money. I got
money.
The first $2 million and he got the last $6 million.
Yeah.
What I think's very interesting, and maybe you can kind of talk about this a little bit more, is I don't think a lot of people realize, I mean, that started in 2009.
Exactly.
And here we are, just recently,
you 2023.
Said
it,
yeah.
And it just 2023 22 session in Washington.
So, I mean, it's taken that long for these projects to move along. And that's...
Well, that's just that's funded.
Yeah. And that's a big project. But even some of these small projects, it still takes years sometimes to get the ball rolling.
Where the only... That is... There was other water, like New Mexico, Arizona. They never got that put into their bill. Or any other Native American reservation in the United States. And they're all now they're really after coming after it because we got ours funded. So now everybody else is seeing that activity. And, you know, a lot of these people don't, like I said, they don't have running water. They have to take their pickups and their trailers and drive to town, which might be 30 or 40, 50 miles away.
On terrible roads.
On terrible sandy roads. And by the time they get back, half their water's splashed out of their tubs. And so it's really a big windfall for our native, our Utah citizens.
Representative Lyman, do you have anything to add or other projects? Or
yeah, you know, I guess if we're talking about water, a lot of the work that you do at the legislature is, you know, appropriations. You don't really have your name on something. And the legislature jointly worked hard on some of the grazing improvement money. And so I was in the commission when the Bears Ears Monument was designated. We fought it hard, not because we don't like monuments, but because we think they should be done reasonably. And then was in the commission when Donald Trump reduced the size of the monument. Was in the legislature when we got some grazing improvement money that authorized a bunch of wells to be drilled. And so they went to work both in the Grand Staircase and in the Bears Ears National Monument and have drilled hundreds of water wells out on the range that had no water previously. Even though the monuments were put back to their original size or larger, we have infrastructure there now that gives a little bit of a toehold to the ranchers, but more importantly, kind of to Senator Hinken's point, you know, people are not having to haul water as far now to take care of their herds out in these, you know, these vast dry desert lands. And so that's made a huge difference, you know. So, and on the water settlement with the Navajos, that's one of those things that kind of dragged me into the politics. I'm a CPA, so I was working with Utah Navajo Development Council, the oldest Navajo nonprofit in the state, tribal organization, oldest Navajo tribal corporation. And I wanted to wrap it up because it was getting beat up. Utah had said they're not going to manage the trust fund anymore. I think in 2007, I called a friend of mine, Mark Maryboy, and said, "Hey, let's wrap up UNDC and shut it down right instead of just, you know, leave this black spot." And he had a different idea. He said, well, after 2 years, I think it was with the 2009 discussions, he said, well, let's see if it could be the step in and be the trustee. And even though that wasn't successful, all that work with Mark Maryboy, we were driving back from, we'd been out to DC, and this was just as a CPA, and I was driving back with him, and I said, you know, maybe I should think about becoming a county commissioner. And he really encouraged me to do that. So that's kind of, you know, the rest is history. Got into that. But that water settlement has been a really important one. And a lot of people that get a lot of credit for sticking with it and seeing it happen. But water down here is pretty important. There's other legislation that I'm very proud of, you know, with dealing with public lands and some fights I've had with CITLA that I think have been productive and borne some fruit, even though I do call them fights because they are fights. Sometimes that's what you do, but they are productive and not meant with rancor or animus, just, you know, having to stand up for people in the rural areas that don't have a very big voice in the legislature. And that's, we really band together. We try to make good friends on the Wasatch Front. And I, again, my hat's off to my colleagues there at the table because they're much better at it than I am, but that's the key to some of this legislation is being able to get the Wasatch Front legislators to recognize that it's a real issue, such as the Navajo water settlement. So great stuff.
Yeah, thanks. I think something that, at least that I just am always in awe, and so thank you for your work on public lands, is like, for example, San Juan County, and I might have my figures off just a little bit, but like 96% or 94% of the whole county of San Juan County is public lands, meaning only 6% of the county is actually privately owned. However, you still need all that land to help the county, and the county still...
Well, it's not much of a tax base. It's not much of a tax base when you don't have taxpayers living on it.
Right, but then the county's still responsible for a lot of that
exactly.
Public land.
Search and rescue, yep. all the road maintenance and construction.
That's a really great point. I mean, we're 92% public. We'll be up a little bit because CITLA is pulling 100,000 acres out of the county. And so that's going to, not that they're considered public, but it's going to make that even more federal. But on top of that, we've got a big section of private property, the one big section of private property. And while I was a commissioner probably in 2011, 2012, the federal government came in and slapped a sage grouse designation over all of that big section of private property. So you say, well, we're 8% private. But, you know, now 80% of that is under a sage grouse designation. And it's just and with no regard to the county or the state's wishes on that.
Right.
It restricts any development on your own property that you actually can't do because it's going to impact animals that's not even there.
Yeah. Right. It's part of the battle.
Yeah. And all of the speculation for minerals extraction, that all just goes away. Right. You know, those companies that, I always say there's two industries with extraction. One is extracting minerals. The other is the speculative market, buying and selling leases on land. And all of that dries up and goes away when federal government comes in and slaps a designation like that. It's really harmful to the landowners, to the county.
Well, yeah. And they do it without any consultation with anybody. They just come in and do it.
So the point I'm trying to make is I appreciate your fights, what you say, your fights that you have with them.
Yeah. One thing you got to keep in mind that Blanding, south of the town of Blanding in San Juan County, the White Mesa Mill is the only operating uranium mill in the United States. And 20% of the power produced in the United States comes from energy from nuclear reactors. And so the fuel that we get right now, most of it's coming from Russia. And even the new plans for the new types of
Like the nuclear reactors
and stuff, that they're going to be thorium reactors rather than the nuclear reactors. And so there's a bunch of stuff, but even the one up in Idaho and National Laboratories, as the fuel is going to be used for that, as well as one from Kemmer. A lot of it comes from like Russia or other countries, China, Russia. And so if we're not on a good relationship, you're either not going to get the product or you're going to pay a very, very expensive. And so it's going to drive the price of energy to U.S. citizens. And so if we're going to close all of our carbon emitting plants, natural gas, coal-fired, we've got a long ways to go, because uranium is 20%, which we can get there with uranium, with nuclear reactors. But with wind and solar, it's going to be very hard. I mean, it's probably less than 5 or 6% nationwide. And because when they talk about renewables, they're also talking about hydro, which is a big chunk, bigger chunk than probably wind and solar. But we would like to make sure that Mesa Mill would be a windfall. But even now, they're talking about changing it to a rare earth, which to make batteries for electric vehicles. But yet they still get protested and picketed. And even then, they're being used for remediation of contaminated water. They actually go in there and take the uranium out of the water so they can dispose of it, because there's nowhere to get rid of disposal, because Yucca Mountain, we've spent $15 or $20 billion on developing that, and it's not allowable. Now I understand that in Carlsbad, where they were going to have a repository for nuclear waste, the new governor of New Mexico insists that that's not going to happen in New Mexico, when they've got a perfect scenario of a salt bed there by Carlsbad.
That can take it.
They could take it, and they are taking some from remediation from some of the nuclear from northern up by Albuquerque. And so they're storing their stuff that was produced in New Mexico, but they're not taking out-of-state stuff.
Interesting.
So, well, and I think if I can chime in, please. Because Energy Fuels has the only mill that's really authorized to deal with radioactive material, and so much of virtually all of the rare earth processing deals with radioactive material, they're already licensed to do that. So not only they're the only uranium processing mill in the United States, by default, they're the only rare earths processing mill in the United States. And
licensed, and it takes forever to get licensed to handle uranium.
So they're shifting into that in a really big way. And as Senator Hinken said, you know, that's what it takes to make these high powered magnets that are used in electric motors for electric cars. And all of that is outsourced currently to between Russia and China. And so for a United States company to have that material shipped to someplace in the United States instead of to a port in Portland and off to China, it's a big deal and a huge opportunity for Utah. And if you look at the map where that mill sits in relation to the uranium deposits and the rare earth deposits in New Mexico and Nevada and California and all around, it's in a really ideal spot. We've got the San Rafael Research Center that is just leading out on some of the thorium reaction stuff and the medical isotopes. Utah is poised to really step into this space for small modular reactors for nuclear. Huge opportunity that the legislature, I think, could really help, you know, come about, and the governor's office. And so we're getting the education out again to people and helping that move.
And we're talking about power production mostly with this, the uranium and stuff, but think about all the x-rays, either at airport security or even at customs, to where you have to x-ray these containers of all the stuff that could be drugs and stuff that could be coming into the United States. Think about just medical isotopes that we use for curing cancer and for diagnosing cancer and everything else that we have. I mean, we're completely dependent upon uranium. I mean, people have no clue how all your x-rays for your animals, for yourself, for your dentist. I mean, airport security, everything that we've got revolves around that. And I mean, we're just painting ourselves in the corner in America by not, and it's just frustrating.
Well, thank you for sharing some of those stories with the White Mesa Mill and some legislation. Representative Watkins, I want to make sure I give you an opportunity to speak about some things that you're proud of.
Well, thank you. I'll just talk about one that really puts a smile on my face. And Senator Hinkins was involved at the beginning of it when Dominion Energy, our gas natural gas company came in and said, we want to help the remote rural areas be able to have natural gas. And so I was able to run the bill that allowed them to go out and to these remote areas. And one of the first ones they're doing, and it's kind of coming down to the end. It was in Green River, and that I represented Green River for 10 years. And so I happened to even have the mayor, Mayor Bacon, with me on the floor by accident. It was not planned. When I presented the bill to do this, then it passed. And he said to me, we've been trying for 20 years to get natural gas to Green River, and we have just done it. And it took a while, but they're into Green River, and they're going to be hooking up homes and businesses. And Green River's in a wonderful place to grow, and they never have. And one of the big reasons is because they didn't have natural gas. Everything was electric or propane. And so for me, that was a game changer, because it's going to be, I just received a text the other day from Dominion. We're looking at other remote areas. Send this out to all the communities. We need to know what communities in rural Utah need natural gas because they're going to start doing that.
Yeah. The way it worked, and she was really a key player in getting this done, but they take a percentage of the gas bills from Dominion, which was Mountain Fuel originally, and then Questar, and now Dominion. And so they take a percentage of that, and they put it in a fund to develop. Otherwise, they'd never be able to afford it. It's like all the turkey plants over on Moroni. They can't afford to heat those with propane, so right. Natural gas. But now with natural gas coming to Green River, we've got people looking to put in fertilizers, because fertilizer uses natural gas for nitrogen production. And so it's got a real opportunity, and we're really starving for that. I mean, all of our agriculture is dependent upon nitrogen for production. And so it could be a real windfall, because you've got an interstate, you got I-70 going through there, you got the rail, you got Highway 6, you got power, you know, everything's there.
They have water.
Everything. They got more water than anybody else in the state. So they're sitting really in a good position. Yeah. But like she said, they were lacking to heat those big warehouses. Is just
you can't do it.
Can't do it with propane.
No. So I mean, that's great for not only the citizens of these small rural communities, but just the economic development that will come about for
national security and agriculture.
I think you'll see a lot of these rural communities, as that natural gas gets into the community, they'll be able to grow, because business will be able to go in there and do what needs to be done, what they can do. So
right,
it's exciting.
Well, thanks for sharing some of the successes that you all as legislators have done for the citizens of Utah and for the businesses of Utah.
It looks like the geek is on the sneak. It's time to play Geeky or Game Over.
At this time, we'd like to play a little game that we have on our podcast. It's called Geeky or Game Over. The way the game works is I will give you a topic and you will answer if you're geeky about it, if you like it or enjoy it, and answer Game Over if you don't like it or if you haven't heard of it. And you're welcome to elaborate more on the answers you give. So with that said, are you three ready to play?
Yes.
Yes.
Maybe.
How about we'll start with one, baseball.
Love it.
Love
Maybe get a Major League Baseball team in Salt Lake City. It's sounding like
hopefully. Possibility.
If Vegas doesn't take it from us.
Well, there's three. There could be three of them up. But a transfer of the Oakland A's, but then also two startups.
Two expansions, yep.
And so we could be in the running.
Yep, we'd be possible. Great.
I would love it.
Yeah.
How about you, represent Lyman?
Utah should be right in the middle of that. I always say my favorite team is the Boston Red Sox, not because I necessarily like the team, but because I like the B on their hat. To me, I always wear it and say it stands for Blanding. So,
yeah. Well, and I wouldn't be too surprised. I wouldn't be too surprised if Illinois keeps going the way they're going, to the Chicago Cubs, and also the White Sox may be looking to relocate.
Yeah.
Possibly.
River rafting.
Love it.
Love it.
It's amazing.
We got the Colorado River that runs through Moab, and also the Green River that runs through Desolation Canyon. And so that's a big windfall for southeastern Utah. It's a big recreation and it's a good business for people that's involved in that.
And the San Juan River.
San Juan River, it's a very good.
And now even the San Rafael River with all the water they're turning out. So when you get 200% of normal snow, it makes a lot of difference on the rivers.
Cooking.
I love it too much. I'm like 50 pounds overweight. Maybe 70.
I'm a consumer, not a producer in that area.
I like to cook, but the problem is time.
Yeah.
But I do like to cook.
Yeah.
I like outdoor cooking.
Yeah,
so like barbecuing, smoking, things like that.
Tinfoil dinners, anything outside.
Yeah. Dutch oven.
Yeah. I'm like Representative Lyman. I'm more of a consumer than a producer of it. Last one, we'll do ATVs, OHVs.
Well, I'll say this. We had one of the biggest events that Blanding or San Juan County has ever seen. Moab's the mecca for that stuff, but we had a huge event last week and all of the big names were there, the UTV Utah folks. And it was really refreshing to see. We got a new business in town, Sunshine Tours with Josh Nielsen there. And so the future is bright with UTVs. That is a huge industry in Utah. It's bigger than the skiing industry, if you can imagine. It's amazing. So, yeah. And Southern Utah is
perfect.
Ideal. Perfect for it.
Yep. Perfect.
Yeah. I've been teaching my grandson how to drive. So
good. Well, thank you for playing. Thanks for that little break. I think it's just nice to have the listeners kind of get to know our guests just a little bit more on a personal level, get to know those interests. Lastly, as we end the show, can you speak to how citizens get involved? If someone has an idea for some legislation, how can they work with you? How do they get the ball rolling? I mean, it's a process. Obviously, we talked about that with the water down in Navajo Nation, starting in 2009 to now finally getting funded, not even there yet, but just getting the funding. So
like most of us, we get involved in what our situation is, but we don't know everyone's situation. And just like that, how many people in Utah knows that there's no running water on the Navajo Nation? If we don't know what's going on, it's kind of hard for us to help them or to fund it or to help create laws or something that might be prohibiting, you know, their
and for a lot of us, our bills are constituent driven because almost they do call us or email us or text us or meet us in the grocery store because we do live here.
Yeah.
You know, each of us lives in a different part of our district, but we all overlap. And so most of the time for me, and I see it with other representatives and senators, it's because someone reached out to them and says, government is causing a problem for me. I need it fixed. And that's what we do.
Problem is, you fix one problem for a person, you create 40 problems for everybody else.
And that's hard to explain to people sometimes.
They just look at their side of the street, you know, and don't worry about anybody else's.
Yeah.
So we have to, and that's why we have 104 people in the legislature. And it's quite an ordeal to get a bill passed. It has to have 15 votes in the Senate and
38
in the House. And then you got to have the governor sign it. So it's not easy to do. It's a good process. We have a great process. Yeah.
But if people reach out,
spend
ideas, then
public awareness, even if it doesn't get passed, at least a public awareness that you're intruding on other people's lives and to back off a bit or there's going to be a bill passed because, you know, after so long, people finally get fed up and says it's time.
The best bill is a bill that's not passed.
Exactly.
In other words, you solve the problem without making a law. I had one this session that it was, I knew it was going to be controversial, but you have to bring it out, let people know that it's the issue, and then you get the right people around the table, and it solves. Yeah.
What is the easiest way to get a hold of you? We can find your contact information on the state website. Mm-hmm. So just a call, text.
Best to call me.
I love text messages, but I always answer my phone if it's not a legitimate call. I'll hang up on it if it's one of those people that wants to know if I'm going to change my car insurance or something. But we all have our own ways. But emails, you can kind of get lost, you know, sometimes because we get so many.
Yeah, especially during session when people are thinking about it. Mostly, you have interns working for you, and sometimes you try to catch the important ones, but sometimes they put them in a file that I'll never see again, you know, it's like, because I don't know how to get into those things.
Yeah. For me, it's text. Yeah. Texting is by far the best.
I like text too.
Emails are, especially during the session, they're downstream I
they're gone.
I miss way more emails than I respond to. I'm not proud of it, but it's just the reality.
Yeah, I don't like to answer emails much myself personally, but I do like to call because I like to talk them off the ledge, because usually when they call, they're upset, you know, and you don't know that on an email sometimes, right.
And the best way is to get a hold of us before the session.
That's how I was just going to ask.
Once the session starts, we're so busy, we can't go back. If you want us to do something, you need to notify us.
Start now.
Yeah, now.
Yeah, and your own deadlines.
Yes.
We can start opening bill files like in May.
So. Right. And we can be working on them during the summer, because people will come to me in November and it's way too late.
Well, every month we have interims, and we actually can talk about bills and stuff there that we can bring into our committees. And so that's the time to get it aired out in the public and to find out if it's a good thing or a bad thing. And so you don't waste the time, because it's such a short 45 days, but that's counting weekends.
Yeah.
When we're actually in session. So it's not a lot of time for discussion. And so a lot of people say, well, they didn't have public hearings. Well, a lot of times we have, but it's during the interim to where, you know, they haven't been paying attention.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Jade, one thing I tell people, if they're looking to the legislature to solve their problems, they're going to be disappointed. We're representatives of the people.
We create more problems we solve.
We do. We absolutely do. And it should be this is still a government by the people. We're representatives. We've got to hear from them. They've got to be active. I always say, God bless the non-compliant. If we pass a bad law, someone's got to stand up and say, that's ridiculous. We're not going to do it. And if they don't, then it's assumed, oh, well, they must, you know, there must be some agreement here. So really, America is still a government that values, you know, the people's input. And the purpose is, you know, to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, as the Constitution says. And that can only happen if people are willing to recognize that they are, that this is a citizen government. They have a responsibility. If they, you know, delegate that too much, then things start to fall apart.
Yes. Thanks for taking some time out of your day to meet with me and to talk to our listeners about some of the issues and the legislation that's been passed in the state of Utah. I appreciate all your dedication and all your work that you do to represent the people and to hear from the people and to help the people and do whatever you can for us as citizens here in southeastern Utah. With that said, thanks for listening to our listeners. Thanks for coming in. I hope you have a great day, and until next time, take care of yourself.